No risk it, no biscuit.
Coming from the Arizona desert, presented by SBNation.com. For Arizona Cardinals fans, by Arizona Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider's perspectives, this is Revenge of the Birds. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans. This is Jess Root from Revenge of the Birds Radio. I'm your host, and we are talking on a Tuesday evening. I've got Seth Cox on the line, and if you paid attention to the weekend, whoo, what a weekend. The Arizona Cardinals come away with a postseason win, a 26-20 overtime thriller over the Green Bay Packers at University of Phoenix Stadium. I was there in the press box. It was something else. A magical game, a lucky game. You had kind of a little bit of everything. I mean, Seth, what was your first takeaways watching that? Just your reaction to how that happened?
Man, I didn't expect anything like that to be that close. Maybe overall, you know, the final score wasn't shocking, but the fact that it had to go to overtime for them to win it, you know, that was kind of, I didn't expect that at all. And so I think that was the first thing. The next thing was they made the plays they had to make to win, and that was something that I think we all were wanting to see, if, you know, Carson Palmer could kind of exercise the demons and break the narrative. I'm not sure he broke the narrative, but he definitely exercised some demons in the process. And I think that's kind of what you come away from on that, is that, you know, maybe they can win it all with Carson Palmer at the helm.
And what we had was a Cardinals team. Kind of the rundown. Yes, the Cardinals got a 26-20 overtime victory. It was a game that Cardinals fans, you know, had to feel not so good about. The first half didn't feel good. They got the front touchdown defensively. Aaron Rodgers was moving the Packers down the field, but it's towards the end of the first half, it was starting to get the feeling like, this is going to go the wrong way. And going into the second half, it kind of continued that way. Things started turning the Cardinals' way. They got a real fortunate touchdown. The last sort of half of a quarter just kind of went bonkers in terms of, if you haven't seen any of the highlights, Cardinals get a go-ahead touchdown on a throw that was intended for Larry Fitzgerald. Demaryius Randall gets his arm in there and deflects it, and it lands in Michael Floyd's hands to get the touchdown. They take the lead. Carson Palmer has an interception dropped and near the goal line. He's intercepted in the end zone on another possession. Then the famous end of the game, the Cardinals have the chance to run the clock out, or run the clock down virtually. Decide to throw on second down on an incomplete pass. They end up kicking a field goal to go ahead 20-13, leaving just a little bit of time left on the clock. The defense kind of starts out, does their thing. They force a sack Aaron Rodgers deep in their own territory, dropping him at the 5-yard line, forcing into a 4th and 20. And Aaron Rodgers does his magic. He sees some magic the rest of the way. He hucks it down the field for a 61-yard completion to Jeff Janis. And then on top of that, we have the Hail Mary 2 from Aaron Rodgers. He won a game against Detroit earlier in the season, and with no time remaining, spinning to his right and spinning to his left, hucks the ball up in the air and completes the Hail Mary pass to tie the game, well, to eventually tie the game to Jeff Janis again, who was getting significant playing time because Randall Cobb left the game with a chest injury. The extra point is made. They go to overtime. Then the coin flip. The coin doesn't flip, so they reflip it. Cardinals win the toss. And the rest is history. First play, 75-yard catch and run by Larry Fitzgerald, reminiscent of another famous 70-plus yarder from Fitz many years ago. And a couple plays later, shovel pass to Fitzgerald into the end zone. Cardinals win. Another overtime thriller between the Packers and the Cardinals at University of Phoenix Stadium. What we're going to talk about tonight, obviously, is the game, and then moving forward is the Cardinals head to Carolina to face the number one Panthers, 15-1 Panthers, who dispatched the Seattle Seahawks 31-24, taking a 31-0 lead in the first half, and then giving up 24 points in the second half. Basically, Seattle just ran out of time for what will be the deciding game to go to the Super Bowl. Will it be Carson Palmer and the Cardinals, or will it be Cam Newton and the Carolina Panthers? So we're going to talk about a few things, such as where this game ranks in games that we've seen. We're going to talk about, well, did the Cardinals play well? We'll take the takeaways, good and bad, the play of Palmer, the play calling. Then we'll talk about the matchup against Carolina, what worries us, what doesn't. But let's first, you know, Seth, where does this rank among the Cardinals games you've ever seen?
Right now, I think you rank it third, probably third. So you got the NFC Championship game. And then I think Green Bay 1 was a better, more entertaining game, because basically what happened in the fourth quarter and overtime just happened the entire game. So just slightly more entertaining. But I think, and this is just me, I think if the Cardinals win on Sunday, I think it becomes probably 2, barring, that game being amazing in its own right. So I think it becomes number 2. But yeah, I think it's right there at 2 or 3 in terms of, you know, of what it meant, the entertainment factor. Because let's be honest, 2.5 quarters of it was not pretty football if you're an Arizona Cardinals fan. And then that last quarter and a half, you know, were just exactly what you expected from the game, except for, you know, the end of regulation where the defense kind of disappeared and Aaron Rodgers had some miracles answered. And so, yeah, I think right now it'd be 3 with a win over Carolina, depending on how that game plays out. I think 2.
And for me, in terms of, this is the number one, just absolutely nuttiest game I've ever experienced. Just so many weird things, just things that are improbable. I mean, a coin that doesn't flip, a touchdown deflected, and it wasn't just, you know, I've seen touchdown deflections that go the other way, but this is, you know, probably one of the strangest. There are a couple of other plays that I've seen that were just absolutely weird. I think it was the Colts had a pass a couple years ago that just happened to hit one receiver, defender, and deflect in his other arms, and it turned like an 80-yard touchdown. The Harold Mary, that I can't remember if it was Jacksonville or Carolina or what team it was, that batted down, textbook bat down, of the Hail Mary, and it happens to just land into the trailing receiver's arms, who happened to be coming up at the right time. But in terms of bonkersness, this game had everything. It was the sway of emotions. And in terms of, you know, games that affected me as a fan and as a writer, as a reporter, as an analyst for the things that I do, this game affected me almost in the same way, but on the other side of the spectrum, as last year's Carolina game in the playoffs. The Carolina game, that was the most deflating game I'd ever experienced, and it was actually almost impossible for me to do any work related to the Cardinals after that. And I had to write the recap. I can't remember what part I had to write. I had to do some post-game assignments, and I just sat there and just couldn't do it, because that loss was so deflating. In some ways, for me, that loss was even more deflating than the one in the Super Bowl, because the Super Bowl loss was, you know, it went from high to low, but this, the one against Carolina, was so embarrassing. And this one, I just was in awe with how it finished. I couldn't, it didn't make any sense to me. Best game ever? I would have to go with that first Green Bay game, because it was magical. It wasn't bonkers. It was just magical to see Kurt Warner and Aaron Rodgers just dropping dimes back and forth, and then the defensive play. Cardinals again kind of getting lucky on a non-call in that game, as Mike Adams actually, you know, did get Aaron Rodgers' face mask, and it probably should have been a penalty, but game over, they win that one. But, you know, that's right up there, and it's just a classic game. I can't think of another game that just had so many weird things.
Yeah, it was an odd game overall, right? Like from the Cardinals' offensive ineptitude to the weird, like, Eddie Lacy long run that seemed like it didn't, like, it took 5 minutes for him to get down the field, and like he had no interest in finishing the run. He was almost running into Cardinals players, like, please tackle me, like, let's be done with this already, you know, to Aaron Rodgers all of a sudden, you know, kind of, I mean he found it a little bit last week against Washington, and you know, all of us, I won't say all of us, but a lot of Cardinals fans said, it's Washington, it's just Washington, it didn't matter. This is the Cardinals. This is one of the greatest teams ever assembled. And then he said, no, I'm probably the best quarterback alive, and I'm going to take these scrubs that how many of those receivers that he was throwing to after Randall Cobb left would even be on the Cardinals roster? One? Maybe?
Maybe Janice, because he's fast.
Yeah, and he's a special teamer. Yes, so, yes. Yeah. So, Janice. And he's, I mean, he's moving the ball up and down the field, and he's, you know, he's getting, he's scoring points on a great, what was considered a great Cardinals defense. And then all of a sudden, you know, Carson Palmer starts to throw up all over himself, and everybody's saying, it's true. He can't play in the playoffs. I mean, he can't do it. And then he makes another inexplicable decision, and yet the ball finds Michael Floyd in the back of the end zone. And it's like, okay, well, maybe that was what he needed. Maybe that was the bounce, you know, the play to wake him up. And in spite of the heroics and the greatness of one Aaron Rodgers, it didn't matter, because Carson Palmer found a way to make the two plays he had to make in the game to, you know, to win the game. And yeah, it was just weird. Did they ever say, so I don't understand why Green Bay was upset about the coin flip, because they called tails, right?
Yes. So the Cardinals technically won the toss both times. What Aaron Rodgers is saying that is when the ref made the flip and it didn't flip, it just frisbeed or floated or whatever you want to call it. He picked it back up. He actually turned the coin over and then flipped it again, but didn't give Rodgers a chance to recall it. Which,
recall, okay.
Which, you know, okay. Technically, so it's the same coin toss. It did it again, but Rodgers, you know, after the fact says, you know, he always calls what is opposite of what is facing up. And the ref had actually, when he picked it up, he turned the coin over to flip it again, and so he didn't get to recall or whatever. You know, it sounds like sour grapes, honestly. And what makes it worse, I mean, just kind of going off topic there, is the fact that Green Bay is talking about the whole overtime thing. You know, Clay Matthews says, well, we should just do what college does. You know, we should get the ball. Each team gets the ball. The point is, they wouldn't be saying that if they won the toss and scored the touchdown. They wouldn't be lamenting the fact, well, it's really a shame that Arizona didn't get the ball to, you know, to see what happens after that. And then the funny part after that is where we find out that when they had the rules change approved, and that was actually on the table, where regardless of result, regardless of touchdown or field goal, that each team would get a possession. Green Bay voted against it as a franchise.
Well, and let's be honest. They've had the ball first in the playoffs against Arizona and lost.
Yep.
So what did it matter? You know, I try to respond to Green Bay fans in a polite way on Saturday night, as they were, you know, lamenting this overtime rule after, you know, for the first time in a decade, because they didn't care before, you know, until tonight or that night. And you know, I brought that up, and there was no response. Because there is no response. Oh, it's not fair. Aaron Rodgers didn't get a chance to get the ball. Well, what happened last time you played Arizona in the playoffs? Well, yeah, he didn't get a ball, this time. Exactly. Like you can't have your cake and eat it too. The last time it didn't work, you know, it could the outcome have been different? Probably. But guess what? Arizona gave the ball to one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL in 2009 and found a way to make a play. It's, you know, you can, why don't you get mad at Julius Peppers and Nick Perry for not wrapping up the immobile Carson Palmer, who honestly I figured he was going to blow out a knee on that spin move. And, you know, like that's what I saw happening there. Not the, improbable throw across the field to set up the game winning touchdown.
You know, that play, you know, Carson Palmer out Aaron Rodgers, because that was a, you know, that was an Aaron Rodgers type thing. He spins away from pressure, you know, turns and improvises a bit to do that. The whole overtime thing is just, I mean, it's absurd. It's absurd to say that, because all they had to do was stop Arizona from scoring the touchdown. Keep them out of the end zone. They get the ball back. And the idea is, you know, the NFL and the college rules, college overtime is a blast. Oh, my heavens. It's just so fun, and it's so nerve-wracking. But when you take special teams out of it, it's not quite football, you know? So you've got to make a plays in the NFL. You've got to make plays on special teams. You've got to stop them. You've got to make plays on defense. You keep Arizona out of the end zone, even if they kick a field goal, you get the ball back. They couldn't do it. They couldn't tackle Larry Fitzgerald, who's an old man who can't run.
Well, and that's the thing, is, like, make a play. Like, make a play. The Cardinals made a play. You know, you can't lament the fact that you didn't get the ball when you had a chance, when, what, five guys missed tackles, six guys missed a tackle on one play. So, I mean, I get it. I do understand it. But it's been the rules for, what, at least a decade. I mean, it used to be worse. So, you know, all you had to do is you could have, like, they could have still held them to a field goal, right? Like, they didn't have to give up a touchdown, but they did. And you know, I don't understand the whole complaint in the scheme of things, because, you know, 6 years ago or 7 years ago, it was the same situation, and the Cardinals won, you know, or it was the same situation with the roles reversed and the Cardinals won. And now, you know, now the Cardinals got the ball first, and they won. So,
and to note,
clearly
on that,
it's on Green Bay.
And on that 2009 game, too, that play doesn't ever happen if Aaron Rodgers doesn't overthrow a wide-open receiver down the field.
Yeah, exactly. So you know, they can lament everything they want. Those are still the rules, and they're going to have to, you know, deal with it, I guess.
And so let's talk about, did the Cardinals play well? The Cardinals play well. That's an interesting question. I think for the first half, you can say that they really didn't. Offensively, they looked out of sorts, and we find out after the fact that the Cardinals had a more conservative, you know, game plan going in, not necessarily because of Bruce Arians, but because of Palmer. The plays that he picked were, he wanted to attack them in the short game first for whatever reason. You know, Arians hypothesizes that it was so that I don't want to screw up. And even still, he still almost did. He still made his own bit of screw up. So that was after the script of plays. That they went in a little more conservatively and defensively. What we saw is you know, the kind of game plan that works against them. You get an accurate quarterback that dinks and dunks. Drew Brees did it. Teddy Bridgewater did it. They weren't making plays down the field, but they were dinking, dunking the heck out of the Cardinals and moving the ball down the field.
Yeah, and you know, back to Aaron Rodgers missing throws. He missed three or four deep throws on the game, too. So, you know, they were doing the Patriots thing, you know, short, and then he'd go long and they just missed. I think it was about 2.5 quarters, maybe a little less than half, you know, the third quarter, but where they just weren't making plays, and they looked scared and tentative and overwhelmed by the situation. So, you know, I don't want to say they played well, because I think that's an insult to how they've played all season. But I also don't want to say that, you know, Green Bay didn't earn that, you know, late, what was it, fourth quarter, you know, with 3 minutes to go or 4 minutes to go, the lead that they had. They did earn it because they just flat out played Arizona, whether it was game plan, whether it, whatever it was, that's just the reality of the situation.
And, you know, if you look at how the game, you know, in terms of the tentative, you know, this is a situation where I think you saw the Cardinals needed that rest. They needed the week off. They wanted the bye. But the bye sort of bit them in the butt because they got a confident Packers team who did, in a way, Aaron Rodgers found his mojo. They got a little rhythm going and found a little success. And that's the danger of the bye. But at the same time, they needed it. And with that Cardinals team being mostly inexperienced with the situation, and I think it started with Palmer. It had been a while. I mean, the last time he was in the playoffs as a player was 2009, and he didn't play all that well then. So, I mean, as much as he said he wasn't thinking about it, you have to know it was on his mind because, you know, he's a proud player. There's one thing that he's very cool, but he's a proud man who believes in himself. And as good a season as he had, I'm sure there was a little bit of pressure on him to not perform poorly. And as a result, he pressed a little bit. I mean, if we had to pick a game, that game reminded me a lot of the St. Louis game, about the way they played. And just they were able to move the ball. They dink and dunk. The running game was clicking for a bit for Green Bay. And then Arizona just wasn't quite in sync.
And I think, and here's what I've texted to some friends and I've had the conversation about. Here's my thought on this game, is either there was two things. Either Palmer really crapped himself and was scared and played, you know, that way. And you know, like you said, so after being scared, he ended up pressing and just making awful decisions. The other thing I wonder, and I went back and looked, because the first Green Bay game was good, but it wasn't like, oh my gosh, you know, MVP Carson Palmer good. I think he threw only two touchdowns, like we're going to complain about that, but only two touchdowns, and he threw an interception. He threw an interception and a half against Seattle, and they threw two interceptions in a half, or, you know, in the game against Green Bay. I wonder if the finger bothers him. And he, you know, like you said, he's a proud man, and he's going to play through anything because, you know, literally unless his leg implodes again.
And there's no way any NFL quarterback says, hey, my finger hurts, so I'm having a hard time throwing.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm wondering if that's part of it. And I think, you know, and I think we can figure that out on Sunday. You know, the question will be answered. If Palmer plays better, I think it was his nerves, and you can give him the benefit of the doubt. If he continues to struggle, maybe he's just really a crappy quarterback in the postseason. But after the season he had, I just feel like you owe it to him, and you know more than anybody, you know, I don't make excuses for bad play, and I haven't been a, you know, huge believer in Carson Palmer, but if he craps the bed again against Carolina, you really got to think that something physically wrong, like that finger has really, you know, bothered him, because the throws he missed in the Green Bay game, whether it be the two interceptions, the two misses to David Johnson wide open, they were just, I mean, poorly, poorly thrown balls. And how many of those have we seen? I mean, you can take the Green Bay game, that Green Bay game, that playoff game, and I'm going to bet there was probably nearly as many bad throws as there were the entire season up until the Philly game when he got injured.
That's probably true, because the one thing he has done all year is just absolutely just drop dimes. One of my favorite lines, Ron Wolfley on the color analyst, on the color commentary, when he said he dropped a ding-dong in the donut hole. And that's kind of what he's been doing all season. And he looked... It looked like the Carson Palmer of the first half of 2013.
It did. It looked like confused, pressing, trying to force plays. Those all that, you know, I think that all describes what it was. And like I said, you know, maybe this is just me buying in to him finally. But I think based on what we've seen all year, you just have to give him the benefit of the doubt that even if it was a choke job, you know, that monkey's off his back and now he should be able to breathe a little easier. Because let's be honest, I think we've all, and I'm guilty, I think we've all underestimated how good Carolina is. And they worked over, yeah, they gave up 24 second half points, but they worked over Seattle. I mean, I don't remember the last time Seattle looked that incompetent in a game, that, you know, down 31-0. And so, you know, if he goes out and plays well and they just happen to lose because Carolina's a better team, that happens. But if he goes out and throws up a stinker, I'll lament and wonder, you know, what happens if he never hurts his finger.
That's a good point. Another point to Carson's play is the one thing that you notice that was different. There's one thing we've noticed all season about him, this immobile quarterback, is how good he's been with his feet, moving around the pocket, manipulating it, just being not athletic, but being good on his feet. And for the first two and a half quarters, it didn't look like that. He was slow and ploddy and uncertain about what he was doing. He wasn't moving well. But then we saw it late in the game. He was, you know, moving the play. I mean, the personified that was the 75-yarder that fits. Because, you know, he had the spot. He wasn't really wrapped up. He wasn't really in any danger of getting sacked. He saw the pressure and spun away from it immediately. And so he saw it coming. It wasn't like he eluded. He wasn't the, like, Eli Manning who had the guy draped all over him. He saw that the guy was there. He spun away from it. Coolly got set, made a throw across the field the other way. So there might be something with the finger, but with his feet as well. It was like he was nervous, but nobody... no one's going to say that he was nervous, but I think the whole Cardinals team was a little bit unprepared for the intensity that Green Bay had. And this, to the point that I made a couple weeks ago, the one thing that you can never prepare yourself for in a playoffs is a rematch game. Green Bay was embarrassed in week 16. That's why they were so focused coming into this game.
And I think part of it was, and you and I talked about this last week, and I said I didn't think there was any way that this game was a blowout because of Aaron Rodgers. And when Randall Cobb went out, I kind of got the idea, like, there's no way at this point, right? Like,
right,
there's
right.
No way. And somehow the greatness of Aaron Rodgers, you know, had them in a position to win the game with 4 minutes to go, and his defense just couldn't do anything finally after all game doing stuff, you know. And so I think you are, you look at it and, you know, you just have to respect the fact that Green Bay was ready. They took that ass kicking they got from the Cardinals, and they developed a game plan that basically was, all right, we dare you to do the same thing. For whatever reason, the Cardinals didn't. I will say that, and Bruce Arians has addressed that, you know, they played a little too conservative in the game on defense, and I thought we noticed that a lot in the game. We didn't see nearly as much, you know, pressure. And as soon as Randall Cobb went out, I would have, you know, brought the house, so to speak, all the time. Like, all right, let's make James Jones and Jeff Janis and Jared Aberderis beat us, but they went the other route and they said, okay, now we really don't have any wide receivers to worry about. And but I think they forgot that they were playing Aaron Rodgers, so that doesn't really work.
Yeah, and you know, the healthy offensive line was helpful. The loss of Okafor, I think, is a little understated here because, you know, as much as we'd like to see, and I want to see Kareem Martin be good, there was a reason why he hadn't cracked the rotation. Now, Okafor had not had a good year, but he is consistently able to push a player and to have a threat of pressure. And Golden is, you know, has developed nicely, and they're not going to use Free anymore, and so they lost a pass rushing threat. They got healthy on the offensive line, so they were able to neutralize a little bit of Calais Campbell, combined with the fact that that officiating crew just wasn't calling holding. But I can't remember where I saw that, but there was a statistic that said there were a crew that just didn't call holding. That's something they just don't do.
No, they don't, and it was interesting. And I thought it was both ways. I mean, I thought Veldier played awful, and then he figured out that they weren't going to call holding, and he played much better all of a sudden. And because he started grabbing Julius Peppers pretty much on every play. And you know, I think looking back, the refs were awful, but it was awful both ways. I mean, we talked about it off the air a little bit. They missed the blatant pass interference on the Jeff Janis first, you know, 3rd and 20 throw down the field. And you know, it was almost karmic that he was the one that caught the Hail Mary to end it, because, you know, he got pass interfered by Justin Bethel. I mean, Bethel, you know, if that was opposite, Cardinals fans would have lost their mind. I mean, if that was the opposite and that was Palmer to Floyd with, you know, 30 seconds left trying to get down the field and they didn't call that, yeah, we would have lost our minds. And so I thought the officiating was awful. And I think both teams did a good job playing through it. But I also think it's much easier for the Cardinals to talk about how, you know, they worked through it because they ended up winning. Whereas Green Bay is going to lament it and look back and go, well, if this got called or if this happens, then, you know, we don't have to worry about it. And I think that's sour grapes some, but I also think it's the way, and I don't mean it as in losers is like, oh, the Packers are losers. But, you know, when you lose a game, you look for all the excuses that are viable and probably true. And the ineptitude of the refs definitely played a part, but like I said, I think it was pretty evenly distributed in how inept the refs were.
Agreed. One thing that was interesting was, in addition to just the play of Palmer, was the and more and more we've kind of seen it. The Cardinals' offense isn't nearly as good, and Carson Palmer isn't nearly as effective if they have no running game at all. I mean, Carson Palmer became the Carson Palmer of, you know, last year in 2013 when the running game was very, very poor. And that's not to say David Johnson played poorly. I do think he was a little hesitant on some of his runs. But, man, the offensive line just got their butt kicked when it came to the running game. And they took away that element. And David Johnson has been such a dynamic part of what they were able to do offensively over the last several weeks. And they sort of took him out in terms of big plays in the passing game, and they bottled him up in the running game. So, you know, that's one of those things to look for, so that they can't run against Green Bay. Are they going to be able to have any success against a more physical Panthers team?
No. But I don't know. I've said this since he started, I guess, since he was kind of forced into the starting lineup, but I was waiting for the rookie wall to hit. And I went and looked at Todd Gurley's stats, because I think it's a fair comparison when you're talking about, you know, highly used and highly productive rookies. And you look at Johnson's first four starts and how much he was used and how good he was, And even the Green Bay game where he only had like 9 carries and 30 something yards, but he had, you know, 4 additional catches for like 90 yards. You know, that's his game. Sometimes he's only going to rush for 45 or 50 yards, but he's so, you know, electric out of the backfield that he's going to catch 4 or 5 passes for, you know, 100 yards as well. But I went back and looked, and his 4-game stretch was basically the same as Todd Gurley's 4-game stretch, where, you know, first it was the Cardinals, and then it was the 3 games after that where he put up just giant numbers. And then he went into about a 4-game lull where he kind of is putting up similar numbers to what David Johnson has put up the last 2 games against Seattle. Now, I know he only carried the ball 12 times, but he only had like 29 yards or 39 yards. Like, he didn't have very many yards in those 12 carries. And then you look at the Packers game again, same type of thing. A little bit, you know, a little bit more physical defensive line. Maybe the holes aren't quite as big. And like you said, there's a little hesitation in his step. And I just think it's partially, you know, all of a sudden you're not playing against bad teams and having these gaping holes to run through. But I think it's also partially that he's, you know, never had to carry a load like this. Even at Northern Iowa, you know, he wasn't getting hit like he does in the NFL. And so now all of a sudden, you know, you're in the playoffs and the hits that you took in the regular season, you know, pale in comparison. And so maybe, and this could be me way being off, you know, being way off base, but I just think he kind of is at that rookie wall portion right now, and we'll see what happens.
And that the way that what you talk about there kind of leads me to believe that, you know, if the Cardinals can actually make it to the Super Bowl, I think you're going to see a real healthy dose of Chris Johnson again, so that David Johnson can ease up a little bit on the workload and become more of what he was early in the year as a more of a big play threat off the bench. And really, it kind of pushes Ellington's play to almost nothing. But I think Chris Johnson, if they're in the Super Bowl, I think Chris Johnson's going to be the bell cow at least early on in the game to pound out those early yards.
I have no doubt in my mind that the Arians game plan was probably to start playing him around the more heavily around the Green Bay game. And then it just didn't work out because of the injuries. I think you're going to see him played heavily in the Green Bay game. And then if they, you know, won and clinched, you know, everything being the same as it was, they won and clinched. And then he was going to go, pretty much he was going to get all the carries in the Seattle game once they decided to fold up, you know, the shop and let him go. And then, you know, the playoffs where he was going to kind of maybe be unleashed a little more. And that just all got expedited because of injuries. And that's not something, you know, unfortunately you can plan for when you're bringing somebody along at a, you know, specific pace.
But another thing, any other takeaways that you can get away from that game? Obviously, there's a lot of worries. I think you now look ahead to Carolina, and there's a lot more reason to be concerned. But at the same time, Carolina is built completely differently, and they don't have the surgical type passing game that Aaron Rodgers does. And it was that sort of passing game that they struggled with against New Orleans, put up big numbers. I mean, they moved the ball down the field. Green Bay was able to move the ball, but the defense kept them out of the end zone for the most part. You know, they tightened up when they needed to. They did that against New Orleans. They did that against Minnesota. You know, Andy Dalton moved the ball down the field, but they were able to kind of do what they needed to do. Now, one thing that I'm positive I kind of like about this game is it followed so many of the other, you know, sort of the roadmaps to victory that the Cardinals have had against quality teams. They score early, and that's super important for the Cardinals to do, especially against quality opponents. They have to get points early. they don't play the same if they don't. So if they can get a lead, that allows them, because what happens, they'll get a lead, the opposing team comes back, and then the Cardinals make plays late. That's exactly what happened, only this time that there was a little bit of look at the very end of regulation that kept the Cardinals from winning in regulation. So that's kind of the thing. Get up, get some early points, take an early lead, and then make plays. They need plays at the beginning and big plays at the end of the game. And going into Carolina, I think that's the key as well. They need to make plays early.
I think the thing I don't want to say have a problem with in what's going to happen with Carolina, but the question I have is the run defense going to show up? Like, they haven't really been a strong run defense against mobile quarterbacks. And, you know, Eddie Lacy gashed him a little bit, which is, you know, like an offensive guard gashing you apparently these days. And it just, that's where my question is because I went back and looked, and it's kind of ridiculous, but Carolina hasn't had a less than 100 yards rushing as a team in 2 years. So I don't want to say like it's impossible, but you're not going to completely shut down the run game. So that leads to my question of what do you do? Like, how do you decide to attack the Panthers' offense? Because I think the Cardinals' offense, if they, you know, wake up and remember how good they are, I think they can, you know, like you said, play from ahead and kind of put the pressure on Carolina to make plays. But I don't know if the Cardinals' offense will get enough opportunities to do that based on, you know, the way that Carolina kind of just kills you with the run and timely passes and Cam Newton, you know, designed runs. So that's my question is, are the Cardinals going to be able to stop Carolina consistently?
That is the one thing. There is one thing defensively that I kind of like this matchup is the Cardinals, while they might not be able to consistently stop their running game, I think they're going to be able to. And I think the way to beat the Cardinals with the passing game is a surgical dink and dunk. However, Carolina doesn't really have that. They are a power team. They like to make throws down the field. And then the running game kind of sets those up. The Cardinals are equipped to defend down the field. And if they load up in the box to kind of stop things there, the X factor is how they handle Cam. Now, 2 years ago, we saw them absolutely destroy Cam Newton. And even last year, you know, even with Ryan Lindley, that Panthers team tried to lose the game. Now, this is a better Panthers team, obviously. And Deion Buchanan is now I don't know if we could even call him a safety anymore. He's a damn good linebacker. With him on the field, I think they can neutralize. They won't stop. I think they will neutralize. They can neutralize the running game to an extent to be dominant. It can be they'll move the ball some, but I don't think they will dominate in the running game. But I think their secondary is good enough that they're going to keep them from making plays down the field, which will limit what Carolina can do.
Yeah, and that's what I'm interested in kind of right now is how the Cardinals match up with Carolina's offense. Because like I said, I maybe incorrectly am confident that the Cardinals' offense can get back on track. But yeah, I wonder how much they'll be able to control the tempo of the game and work through things.
Now, are there any particular matchups that worry you? Now, Luke Kuechly, that's an X factor there, because his ability to do everything is really going to be interesting. And as we saw, you know, it's not Ryan Lindley out there, but we all know that, you know, Carson Palmer is going to make at least one or two throws that you're going to wish he didn't. Kuechly's not one to drop those throws.
You know, the only thing, and I shouldn't say only thing, but my biggest concern for the Cardinals is whether or not their offensive line can get back to being good, right? Like, against Seattle, they were bad, and against Green Bay, they were bad, the second game in the playoffs. And Seattle's front seven is probably on par with Carolina's, but I don't think they've played anybody with the interior defensive line that Carolina has. And they've never, because nobody in the NFL has it, they've never played against a linebacking core as athletic and just dominating as Carolina's. And so that's where the question is can the Cardinals front, offensive line control the line of scrimmage enough to allow Carson Palmer to make those plays? And that's why I say I think that they'll get back on track, because I have faith that they've done it most of the season. But I mean, to be honest, like, if you look at it, Kawan Short, Star Lotulelei, and then the triumvirate of Shaq Thompson, Thomas Davis, and then of course probably the best linebacker in the NFL, off ball linebacker in the NFL, Luke Kuechly, makes things scary, almost to the point where you know that you're going to have to play damn near perfect to make sure that, like you said, they don't get the they're not able to take advantage of your mistakes that you could make.
The Panthers appear that they will be down one of their key pass rushers in Jared Allen. Now, while the Cardinals saw him earlier on in the season as a different member of a different team, he is a pass rusher. The inside is kind of where I worry. Although, if you look at Pro Football Focus, they graded Ted Larson and Lyle Sendline pretty highly, and partly that's because they graded B.J. Raji really poorly. They blew him off the ball a few times, obviously not too much since the running game was not much at all. This is a game where I don't expect it to be a blowout either way. And as good as both of these teams defensively have been, I think it'll be kind of an offensive game. We've seen Carolina get into shootouts. They are definitely mortal. The key for them is you can't let them get up early, because they will showboat and boat race you till the end. And I think against a quality team like the Cardinals, I wonder how they will react to getting punched in the mouth first.
Yeah, you look at who they played, and I know this has become a topic of conversation and a point of emphasis among Cardinals fans all of a sudden, but I'm not sure that their schedule, while it's bad, is as terrible as their. You don't fall into 15-1. Let's be honest about that first. Like, you don't just walk through the season and end up 15-1. And you kind of look through it, and
they've got some good wins. They won in Seattle.
The Seahawks. Yep. They beat Green Bay. Before Green Bay's tailspin, they routed the Redskins. I mean, they just absolutely beat them down, as you said. And then they beat the Falcons. And then that Giants game, and maybe even going back to the Saints game, but that's Drew Brees in New Orleans in the dome. But you go back to that Giants game where they got out to that substantial lead, and I think that's where the chinks in the armor kind of started to come through, because I think what ended up happening was they really believed that teams are going to roll over when they get ahead early, and it didn't happen, and then all of a sudden they were like, crap, we've kind of turned off the engine. And you saw that in the Seattle game, same thing. They get up 31-0, and then all of a sudden it's like, are you going to are you guys going to play anymore? Or are you just going to hang out the rest of the game? You know, kind of, you know, go through the motions. Like, I don't know at all what happened that second half of that game. Yes, you know, Seattle's a good team, so let's not overlook that. But it was just, you know, it's going to be interesting because I think Carolina's a better team when the game is tight versus when they get to a big lead.
Not that the Cardinals are any good at coming back from big leagues, because the only one they've really rallied from is Cleveland. So that's where we come in. Do you have any predictions for this game? I'm not certain at all about predictions yet. I think the Cardinals can win, and I think they will. But that the way they won in Green Bay makes me wonder more than I wondered a week ago.
You know, I've gone back and forth on this, and I told my friends at the beginning of the week, I'm like, I don't think the Cardinals are going to win. And it's not because I think that they're bad or anything like that. I just think that Carolina's a really, really good team. And I think that we've, you know, myself included, have all kind of underestimated how good they were. And so we just assumed that they were eventually going to come back down to earth, but they've been good all season. So, you know, maybe they're just good. You know, 15-1, like I said, you don't just fall into that, and you don't just boat race a Seattle team that, you know, is pretty good. So I'm interested to see. I think it's going to be a field goal game. I really do. And, you know, right now I'm kind of leaning to like a 27-24 Carolina win, but I could honestly see it being the exact opposite and it being a 27-24 Cardinals win. Like, I honestly don't have a great idea of what's going to happen in this game, because I think the teams are very evenly matched talent-wise.
And we'll bring the show to a close there. We've got two kind of unsure guys when it comes to how the Cardinals will fare in Carolina this weekend, but we will know this time next week if the Cardinals are Super Bowl bound or if we will be lamenting the end of their season, perhaps reflecting on the achievements that they've had. And we've already said before, now granted, yes, Carolina's good. We've said if the Cardinals don't make the Super Bowl this year, it's kind of a wasted year, because this is in that window with Carson Palmer playing at a high level. So hopefully we're talking Super Bowl Cardinals next week.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think we can be. I'm not as overly confident as a lot of fans I've seen, but I tend to be that way anyway, so who knows. But I definitely think it's going to be a great game. Like, I don't expect what happened to Seattle to be that type of game. I think it'll be another game similar to the Green Bay game, and we're just going to have to kind of watch and hope that the Cardinals find a way to pull it out again and maybe get a couple fortunate bounces their way.
And that's where we'll have it there. That's been another episode of Revenge of the Birds Radio. We're going to sign off right there. Hopefully we'll be talking about a Super Bowl bound Cardinals in a week from today. And if not, well, like we said, it'll be a little more lament, and maybe we'll talk about what went wrong. But until then, go Cardinals. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. This is Revenge of Bird of Radio News signing off. Thanks for listening.
Have a great night, everybody.
You've been listening to Revenge of the Birds. Keep the conversation going by visiting revengeofthebirds.com. Follow us on Twitter at Revenge of Birds. You can also find us on iTunes at facebook.com/Revenge of the Birds.